We're ready now for the final case of the day, Chicago Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights against Craigslist. Mr. Lebowski.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Stephen Lebowski on behalf of the Chicago Lawyers Committee. I want to make 4 points here this morning. First, Congress enacted Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act in 1996 to encourage and incentivize Internet service providers to block and screen offensive material and to reverse the holdings in the Stratton-Oakmont and the Covey case.
I have a logical question for you, though. It certainly wanted to reverse the holding in the Stratton-Oakmont case because it didn't want providers to suffer a penalty for trying to come up with filtering technology. But it doesn't necessarily follow that Congress wanted to make more onerous somehow life for companies that don't do anything. Suppose it just wanted to make it an absolutely neutral field. You could be a completely passive internet service provider. You could be somebody like Prodigy was in that case, or like other companies may be, and market yourself as somebody with good filtering technology. But if Congress really just meant to create a neutral field, then why should we assume that we have some rule that says you can be sued if you are neutral?
Your Honor, I believe what the Congress did, when you read the legislative history and the way they structured the statute, they tried to make it somewhat neutral. They had two cases in front of them.
Right.
One that said if you block and screen, you may be liable under what happened to be in that case some state defamation law, but if you did nothing, you were not liable. So they were trying to reverse the incentives and say, if you block and screen offensive material, or the second part of the protection, or if you make available the technical means to block and screen, we're going to immunize you from
right,
that activity.
Under the Good Samaritan.
Right. If you do that, we're going to take it away as a point of liability. And in 230E, they even said no state law can be inconsistent with that. But we're going to leave everything else alone. 230C, the immunity, doesn't say we're going to give you immunity for anything other than that, and we're going to leave everything else in the shape we find it.
That's 230C2. My concern, and I'd understood my colleague's concern to be about 230C1, which says that if you operate an online service, then you are not a publisher. And the problem here, it's the one the district judge identified, is that the only way there can be liability under the Fair Housing Act is if Craigslist is a publisher. It certainly isn't the speaker. It's not the one that came up with these discriminatory statements.
I agree, Judge Easterbrook. The speaker part doesn't apply, but publisher and speaker have different meanings in different contexts. But under the Fair Housing Act, you don't need to be necessarily anything other than the person who is one of the causers of the discriminatory ad to be displayed. That's been the law.
What language are you relying on in the Fair Housing Act?
In Section 3604 of the Fair
Housing Act. I know which subsection, but I had thought that in those cases saying, for example, that a newspaper is liable, it was because the newspaper was a publisher. Is that a misunderstanding of those decisions?
I don't know necessarily that it's a misunderstanding. The courts in those cases never pierce through anything other than the general language all used in 3604C. They didn't say whether they were finding liability as a publisher, as a printer, or as somebody who is causing. I believe in the Fourth Circuit case, which is one of the many older ones, the Courier newspaper, at one point they use language, the Courier carries classified ads, and another place they use the word publishing. I don't think the courts in those cases in any way precisely...
Is carry a word from 3604A?
That word does not appear, but I believe it would...
So we need something that hooks what newspapers are doing, for example, to the statute, and that word normally is publish. It's, of course, the magic word in the law of defamation. If I write a classified ad that slanders Judge Evans, and it goes in the newspaper, I'm liable because I wrote it, and the newspaper is liable.
You would claim immunity.
Well, I might claim truth as a defense. Anyway, I'm liable because I wrote it, and the newspaper's liable because it published it. And one would think that that's the normal way in which somebody like Craigslist would be liable, except for
230A1. Yeah,
C1. C1, sorry.
Well, certainly 230C1 states the words that both of you have said, but the real question is, how does it fit within the statute?
Well, that is the question, and I guess what I understand you to be making a very structural argument that C has this heading, protection for good Samaritan blocking and screening. Then you come to 1, and somehow for that purpose, here's who's going to be treated as a publisher or speaker. Not sure if that helps you, but you know Congress, they'll throw things anywhere in a statute. And I think our fellow circuits with whom you're asking us to break ranks have looked at the language of C1 and basically said Congress is trying to tell us that providers of interactive computer services should be treated as something like a phone line. And, you know, if I made a phone call to somebody, and I was even soliciting murder for hire or something over the phone, it doesn't make AT&T liable. They've just provided the phone. Whereas in the Fair Housing Act, to take the more traditional thing, traditional print media do have some liability for what they facilitate. So we need to ask, what's Congress trying to do with this new type of communication?
Well,
it's not so new anymore, but anyway, what were they trying to do in 96 with this type of communication?
Well, let me answer that on the flip side first. We know what they weren't trying to do. If they wanted to totally immunize Internet service providers, they could have done that. They could have said so. They could have done it in whole. They could have done it in part. They could have done it for
No. Look, this is a very different thing from immunizing them. If Craigslist puts a statement saying, we don't like Jews, Craigslist is not immune under 230C. One potential problem with what other circuits have said is that they treat 230C1 as if it were an immunity. But all it says is Craigslist is not a publisher, which, as Judge Wood said, means it's like more like a phone company than like a newspaper. If AT&T slanders you, AT&T is liable. But if AT&T just carries a call from two bank robbers arranging a bank robbery, it's not liable.
I agree. And the question here is whether C1 is a general statement throughout the protection from liability portion of 230C or whether it needs to be read in conjunction with C2.
Let me ask you a question, too. All this subsection business and publishing aside, practically, if you have a successful site like Craigslist, which gets some 30 million hits or postings a month, how do you filter out things that shouldn't be there? Like, I need a hitman, which somebody put an ad on Craigslist for. How do you do that?
Well, Judge Evan, newspapers, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands.
Well, they sure don't have this kind of volume.
Well, they certainly have a very large volume. I don't know, and there's certainly nothing in the record that tells you technologically whether 300,000 is different than 3 million or 30 million. I don't know the answer to that.
Just tell me how you would do it. Craigslist apparently only has 30 employees. So how do they pre-screen when somebody wants to post something on there? I can see once they get notice that somebody complains about it, okay, then maybe they ought to do something. But
well, there are two ways, Judge.
I just don't understand, in the real world, how they could ever do
that. I believe there are two ways. One, they're actually now in their brief to this court for the first time saying they're doing something like that. So whether that's an actual judicial admission that it's feasible and doable, this court is going to have to decide. They're saying they're doing something. There's no evidence in the record. There's only the statement in their brief. But certainly many websites, many different entities use blocking and screening software, be it spam filters or other items, where you can use drop-down menus to force people away from certain words.
How are you going to do that? One of the ads that you objected to says, this apartment is located near a Catholic church and a Buddhist temple. Are you going to say, screen the word Buddhist out?
That's certainly a possibility.
Can't appear on Craigslist? The word Buddhist can't appear on Craigslist?
And we're just talking about...
The church can't appear on Craigslist?
We're talking about the section of Craigslist where there are housing ads, but yes, apparently they are able to do that technologically.
Technologically, there's no doubt that Craigslist could eliminate the word church from its site. But you think the Fair Housing Act requires them to put in a filter so that if you type the word church, it will come back at you and say, this is a prohibited word in American society.
No, Judge Easterbrook, what we believe the Fair Housing Act clearly covers is the series of ads that say no kids, no children, no blacks, no minorities.
And Mr. Lebowski, let me ask you...
Can I ban the word children, too?
Yeah. Let me ask you, though, maybe a question that's a bit related. When I look at 230C2, which is really is the immunity provision, if you will, it doesn't really say blocking and screening technologies. It says any action voluntarily taken in good faith to restrict access to or availability of material. And then I picked up Craigslist's brief in this case, and I find at the bottom of page 5 and the top of page 6, Craigslist saying, what are they talking about? We do nothing. You know, we have made efforts to make sure that our website isn't misused. Craigslist does not encourage discriminatory ads or even intentionally allow them to remain. Just the opposite is true. And then at the top of page 6, they talk about things they do. Now, I realize they're not blocking, screening, filtering things, but what is it in the statute that requires blocking, screening, or filtering instead of putting at the top of the screen a prohibition against discrimination, having educational notices, collecting complaints, tossing things off the list when enough complaints have come in? What is it in the civil liability language that says that doesn't count?
Well, the language actually says any action voluntarily taken in good faith to restrict access to or the availability, and whether those actions, which, again, are not in the record, what's in their brief and what's in the record on appeal are two different things.
Well, they say...
Certainly they make, in response to our complaint allegations, they state affirmative matter. Those factual findings have not been made. They do state in their brief that as a portion of their answer, they allege they have done certain things. When they did them, how they did them, are all questions that have not yet been answered. But whether or not any or all of those, singularly or taken together, constitute the voluntary action taken in good faith to restrict access is something that would have to be decided either at summary judgment or trial.
They cited what appears to be the 56.1, the answer with affirmative defenses. That's what they're referring to, where they say they affirmatively state that stating a discriminatory preference is illegal. I just want to know what you think. You seem to be making the assumption that the civil liability or that this immunity applies only to really proactive things, to use that term, which I don't like very much. But anyway, things that are ex-ante efforts to keep things off that aren't just persuasive or warnings or other kinds of things that require private action to implement.
No, I think 230C2 has two different pieces. One that we've just talked about, you know, the any action voluntarily taken, which may be blocking and screening, it may be other things. B, which really hasn't been talked about much in the briefs, is making technical means available to others, whether you call them V-chips or parental controls or something else.
Right.
So A and B, again, need to be read together. What may satisfy A could well be some of the things you're talking about. The question is, what do you need to do, or do you just have a blanket immunity or blanket protection from liability because C1A uses the term shall not be treated as a content provider. And that's the problem we have with the other circuits and what Judge St. Eve did below, is if you read that as the only part of Section 230C, you come to a very different conclusion. If you read the rest of 230C, you have to figure out what exactly was Congress trying to do here. What did they put these other words in for? They have some meaning. And the meaning that we see from the legislative history plainly talks about we don't want people being held liable because they're blocking and screening offensive. And that's the real predicate that got this statute. I agree the statute says, and part of the legislative history talks about fostering the Internet. I don't believe Congress passed 230C to say we hereby foster the Internet. They had a purpose in passing 230C. They tell us six or seven times. They say it in the title, Protection for Private Blocking and Screening, and they go throughout that. And if you read 230C1 to be the absolute protection, the immunity, the protection from liability, you essentially take that set of protections that Congress plainly wanted to put into the law away.
But why isn't it just something that builds up? First of all, we know from C1 that provider or users of an interactive service are not going to be treated as the publisher or speaker of somebody else's, you know, if someone else provided the content. And in C2, we say, yes, but there might still be something left for providers or users, because what if the provider or user decides to try to put on filtering, blocking, screening protocols? We're going to say you're not liable for that. So why isn't it sort of a cumulative set of protections?
Well, I think as this court said in the Doe versus GTE case, clearly in dicta, that if you read it that way, you've essentially gutted C2. Why would anybody do it if you do nothing? If you're not going to be held responsible because you're not going to be deemed the speaker or the publisher.
Because there may be a market demand. I mean, we were chatting on in Doe, I know, but there might be a market demand. Indeed, we know for a fact that there is a market demand for screening technologies. Libraries like it. Some people like it. You know, businesses might like subscribing to a provider of Internet services that filters somehow.
I believe if that's what Congress intended in this statute, they would have done it in a vastly different way. They would have said, almost in the words you just used, here's what we want to do. We want to make sure that people are not liable in certain instances and only liable in other instances. And they could have structured this statute in a very plain way to accomplish a lot of different things. All we have is how they structured it and the legislative history.
Sad to say, that's true.
I'm into my rebuttal time. I'd like to hold the rest of it.
Your time has expired. Thank you, counsel. We'll give you 1 minute for rebuttal in light of the heavy questioning. Mr. Carone.
May it please the court, Pat Carone on behalf of Appellee Craigslist. There's not only a large body of cases from all of the other circuits, or five of the other circuits, that lights the way here for this court. There is also, I think it's important to recognize the 2002 legislation where Congress revisited Section 230 and in the .kids statute actually extended the reach of Section 230 into a newly created area of the Internet. And Congress could not have been clearer in the committee report accompanying the .kids statute
This is the old wag's line that if the committee report is unclear, we turn to the statute?
No, Your Honor. I think
if Congress wants to adopt a rule, it can enact a statute.
It and that's what
enact
it did
a
in
committee
in,
report.
Excuse me. That's of course what Congress did in 1996 with Section 230, and it has watched how the courts of appeals and other courts have construed the statute consistently and unanimously. And it said in the 2002 committee report that that the courts are getting it correct and that the statute is being corrected. It specifically cited the Zaran case, which has interpreted Section 230C1 as a very broad protection for online intermediaries. I think it's clear that the statute C1 is itself an independent source of protection for online intermediaries.
I would say though, what C1, when I look at it, seems to do is to define the capacity in which one is acting. What mm-hmm. hat are you wearing? Are you wearing the hat of a publisher? Are you wearing the hat of a speaker? Are you somebody else's mouthpiece? It seems to me that's, looking at it logically, that's what it seems to be talking about.
I don't think that that's quite right, Your Honor. I think that it is a substantive rule as to how a category of persons or entities may be treated.
You can't be treated as the publisher, or speaker
of,
information provided by another information content provider. So for that set of claims, which, as Judge Easterbrook said, includes defamation, may include Fair Housing Act, we don't know. If being a publisher or speaker is important to the claim, you're not a publisher or speaker if you're just just putting on somebody else's information. So that's what it says to me.
I'm not sure we're disagreeing, Your Honor. I think that the statute says you may not be treated as a publisher or speaker of third-party content.
It looks like a capacity.
Well, but then the question is,
question, you don't need to get to the question whether there is something else there unless there can be liability for Craigslist without it being a publisher. Is there, in your view, anywhere there can be liability for Craigslist if it is not a publisher? Now, Mr. Lebowski, when I asked him that question, said yes, but he couldn't point to any language in the Fair Housing Act or, for that matter, any decision of the Supreme Court. In your view, what's the answer to that question? Is there a capacity of Craigslist that leads to liability under the Act without it being a publisher?
No. The only role that Craigslist is playing with respect to content here is providing a platform akin to the telephone service, but it is providing a platform for other people to communicate with one another.
I'm not asking what Craigslist is doing. I'm asking about the meaning of the Fair Housing Act. Mr. Lebowski, when I asked him this question, said that the decisions concerning newspapers said they were liable as carriers. Right? Now, if that's a source of liability under the Fair Housing Act, it doesn't look like 230C1 bears on it. Is it a source of liability?
The word carriers?
That's what Mr. Lebowski relied on when I asked him this
carriers
question.
Carriers is not one of the operative terms of the
Why
Fair
not?
Housing Act.
He quoted a Fourth Circuit decision which used that language, maybe mistakenly.
I think it perhaps used it loosely. I think it was talking about generically the concept of acting as a platform for someone else's speech. I think that
when somebody says carrier to me, it means something like a common carrier, the phone company. And I take it that it's assumed, maybe it's never been held, that the phone company would not be liable under the Fair Housing Act.
There has been case law involving phone companies, not involving the Fair Housing Act, but involving other forms of liability where it has been recognized that they cannot be treated as the publisher of...
Let's suppose that somebody sets up a phone bank, right, and starts having phone advertisements. And these are advertisements for housing, and they're discriminatory advertisements. The people at the phone bank say, if you're a single white male, come to us, we're good. Would the phone company be liable under the Fair Housing Act for carrying those messages?
It might arguably be liable as a publisher of those messages, Your Honor. I don't know what other possible word in the statute could be giving it liability. I think that publishing is understood to be, in the law, the indicator of sufficient connection to someone else's third-party content such that you can be held legally responsible for it. I think that
so to update Judge Easterbrook's example just a tad, suppose this bank is filled with 25-year-olds who are texting everybody and saying housing available at such and such address, single white men only, and they're just busily, you know, texting.
Given that that's GSA's view, I think we should all flee immediately. No, I suggest we stay here, and please continue your argument.
That didn't count against your time.
Right. Thank you, Your Honor. You were posing a hypothetical about texting.
About texting, because it seemed to me somewhere in between using a telephone line in the old-fashioned sense and Internet, you know, Craigslist sorts of things.
And the question is would, how does the Fair Housing Act
speak to
that?
Yeah, would the Fair Housing Act and the texting situation make AT&T wireless, or whatever they're calling themselves these days,
well, the Fair Housing Act includes making a statement. Or
did AT&T make that statement?
I think if it's simply passing along third-party content, it is the third party who made the statement. I think that the only if you're going to hold an entity such as Craigslist liable for unlawful third-party speech, particularly unlawful under the Fair Housing Act, you are going to be treating it as the publisher of that content. And I think it's not just a matter of how the Fair Housing Act, as a matter of word choice and semantics, what Congress chose to write it. I think the courts have recognized, and I think correctly so, that there are many other respects in which it is true that to hold a online intermediary liable for third-party content treats it as the publisher of that content.
But let me ask you a quick question. There are glimmers in the briefs that HUD is hovering around the edges of this case somehow, and that they apparently somebody submitted something to the district court that she decided wasn't worth Chevron deference, and so she says no. And then there's this interesting footnote in your brief about working with HUD, and I gather from the letter that HUD seems to think that there is some way that the Fair Housing Act applies. I wonder if the views of the United States would be of any utility to this court on these various statutes.
Well, obviously the United States was fully aware of this case and was free to submit an amicus or otherwise participate if it wanted. I think the fact that it did not do so itself speaks volumes.
Have you ever worked through the Solicitor General's office?
Well, I know it's possible for amicus briefs to appear in cases that government agencies care about. The fact is that HUD dismissed. There is a virtually identical complaint that the plaintiffs in this case, Chicago Lawyers Committee, filed as an administrative matter, and the HUD has dismissed that complaint, presumably on Section 230 grounds. So I think that
they dismissed it, but didn't say why.
They dismissed it following the action by the district court in this case, although during the pendency of this appeal.
Whether they said why?
I don't. I'm not aware, Your Honor, of a statement as to why.
That's a strange thing for a bureaucracy to do. Usually, the bureaucracy won't shut up.
Well, I'd like to turn to the other respects in which treating as publisher is going on here if Craigslist were to be deemed immune here. First of all, it would require Craigslist to engage in the acts of screening, suppressing, choosing what content to allow to go through, what content to suppress. Those are, as Judge Chief Judge Wilkinson in the Fourth Circuit recognized, those are the quintessential acts of a publisher and of publishers in the more broad sense of what publishing is about. And in that sense, to impose as a matter of law that sort of duty on an online intermediary does treat it as a publisher. It also
except you do have C2, which says if you do precisely those things, then you aren't beyond that liable.
If you do it voluntarily. If you do it voluntarily as a good Samaritan. This is not a protection for court-compelled or legally compelled screening and blocking. It is indeed voluntary good Samaritan blocking.
Would you be worse off if a court required you to do something? You wouldn't have some defense to liability? It seems odd.
And maybe this goes to the point about whether there is a disconnect between, as plaintiffs argue here, between the policy of encouraging voluntary self-policing and the broad protection that's found in Section C1. What Congress was doing, I submit that there is not any disconnect at all, and Judge Wood, for the very reasons that you suggested, that in fact Congress understood that there were entities out there like Prodigy who were, as a matter of market forces, seeking and perhaps a good dose of health of good corporate citizenship, were engaging in on their own costly acts of self-policing. And they were doing that because the market was calling for it and because I think they wanted to be a family-friendly entity. That's precisely what Craigslist is doing here with its own voluntary work. Congress understood that voluntary Good Samaritan blocking, screening, other acts to restrict offensive and harmful content, that it did not, it wanted the law to get out of the way of those other incentives. And it saw that that holding online intermediaries liable for unlawful or content of others, in fact, creates a disincentive to doing what the market forces and their own good corporate citizenship would do. And we lay out in the brief why that's so and why that makes sense, because absent Section 230 protection, the background legal principle would be notice-based liability for an entity such as Craigslist, because it would get the same sorts of protections that newsstands, libraries, and bookstores get. That's notice-based liability. If you have notice-based liability, the safest course of action, if what you're worried about is protecting yourself from legal liability, is to completely close your eyes and your ears to what is flowing through your system, because that's the only way that you can be held liable. If you don't have a phone hotline to receive phone calls for, hey, there's a problem with this kind of, or if you don't.
I'm lost by where you're going. All this sounds like the sort of argument you would make to the FCC or some other policymaker rather than an argument based on actual statutes.
Your Honor, I think that's right. I think what I'm trying to respond to
is.
So
why are you treating us as if we were the FCC?
Well, I apologize if I'm doing that, because I would never want to treat a court in such a fashion. But I would say, Your Honor,
I'm suggesting which one is higher.
In my mind, there's no doubt. What I'm responding to is this strong argument that the plaintiffs, strong in the sense that they make it with a lot of vigor, that there's a huge disconnect between the broad protection of C1 and this notion of Good Samaritan blocking. And I just want, and in fact, in the court's GTE Doe dicta, I mean, I think that also was part of what was motivating Your Honor's thinking in that case. And so I'm just trying to respond to that. If I don't need to respond to it, I'm glad to just look at the words of the statute, because I think that's more than enough here.
I had one question, though, back on C1, really. Suppose Craigslist had a section that was called Thoughts or something like that, and the people who load content onto the Thoughts section are, in fact, copyright infringers of the first order. They're putting on things that are definitely copyright protected for other people. And Craigslist says, oh, you know, we're not the publisher. We don't want to know anything about it. Do you think that under the Supreme Court's more recent decisions, that would be permissible for Craigslist?
The
Supreme Court has looked at Internet people and said you can't help with copyright infringement.
And Your Honor, that Congress has had the wisdom to address specifically with a separate statutory regime, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act.
Right.
And I think that's why Section 230, one of its carve-outs is for copyright and other intellectual property law. And the DMCA sets up a very regimented notice,
right,
takedown, putback set of procedures. And Congress has seen for that area, it has seen fit to establish a different regime, one that is highly protective of the intermediary.
You're going to tell us everything's okay.
Attention. The alarm event has been investigated. It was a false alarm. You may return back to your workstations. Attention.
If I may make just an additional point.
I'm so sorry, Mr.
I'm sure this happens at the FCC as well.
The building emergency condition has been cleared. You may return to your normal activity. Attention.
Of course, you can't return to your normal activity as well. This guy is nattering.
Attention. Your attention, please. The building emergency condition has been cleared. You may return to your normal activity.
Okay, Mr. Karam, would you like to return to your normal activity?
If I may, Your Honor.
You've got about 15 seconds of normal activity remaining.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor. Well, I guess the last point I would make is that there clearly is a second key policy goal that Congress had in enacting the statute. It's very clear from the preamble of the statute, the words of the statute itself, and that Congress saw this burgeoning but still young industry coming up. And it wanted to give it special protections. It saw what the risk of liability for all of the potentially unlawful content flowing through it could cause to entities like Craigslist with their tiny staffs and their 30 million postings a month. And it recognized that immunity from liability or protection from liability was a very important thing to allow this enterprise to get off the ground.
Thank you very much, Mr. Karam. Mr. Lebowski, would you like to return to your workstation for a final minute?
I would. Thank you, Judge Easterbrook. To go back to the question of whether the Fair Housing Act under Section 3604C covers more than just publishing, I think the words cause to be made, printed, or published mean something far more than just printed, published, or made. And that would be my answer to your question, Judge Easterbrook, and that's where the cases have come out. But there has been this tension between both the amici and Craigslist in their briefs on the point we've spent most of today on, namely whether they are a publisher or something else. At page 8 of the amicus brief, they go into great lengths to essentially call themselves a carrier, to call themselves a phone company. We shouldn't be liable for anything. Now, I don't know if they really mean that, because it may take them away from C1 liability protection that they're claiming exists. But in reality...
Well, you brought this carrier business back up. So let me ask you, are there any cases saying that a phone company could be liable for text messages or advertisements sent over the phone lines?
I'm not aware of any one way or the other. I don't know if any of those cases have been brought.
There are situations in which it might be thought of as a carrier but wouldn't be thought of as a publisher.
Well, I guess the concern is publisher has a unique meaning in a lot of different contexts. There are 50 states that have different libel and defamation law, and some treat publishers a little differently than others. I'm not versed enough on every possible law that the distinction may be different in. But here, we do know from the complaint and Craigslist answer what they do. They do more than just allow a place to have things posted. They tell you what categories where somebody can speak. They don't have, as Judge Wood said, just a thought place. They have a housing place, an employment place. They have areas that are particularized and set up for people to transact business. What we're complaining about is they've set up a site to allow people to transact housing business, mm-hmm. selling or renting. Mm-hmm. And in that way, are they more like the telephone company or something else?
Thank you very much, Mr. Lebowski. The case is taken under advisement.
Thank you.
The court will be in recess until next week.